Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Mentioned the Worlds of Sport event that is going to be happening in Portland in 2020. So you can go on Instagram at Worlds of Sport to check it out, on Twitter as well. Make sure you give it a follow. Greg Biggins, 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Analyst, Man of the World, joining us here. How you doing, Biggins?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm a little frustrated with high school sports in our state. What's going on in your state with high school sports in California?
So, same. I was reading your piece today, and we're the same boat, California and Oregon, and we keep hearing, maybe next month, then that month comes around, and well, maybe next month. So, right now, no high school football still. They're hoping that things drop into a different colored tier. I don't know what that means anything to you. Maybe it's just a California Gavin Newsom thing, but I think we need to be in a certain tier for a couple of weeks, and then maybe they can start doing some stuff. So, but we do have cross country, John. So I know we're all fired up about cross country. Everyone should be doing cross country, but I think we all want to do football. So
yeah,
it's kind of where it's at right now. We're hopeful for March, but I'm skeptical.
Biggins, you just watched a recruiting cycle sort of go full circle. Let's start with Oregon, because they get a lot of attention here. What is happening in the recruiting world as it pertains to Oregon football?
So I should probably know the exact number. I bet you do, but I know it's number one of the Pac-12. And did they finish up in the top five? I know they're at least top 10. I feel so unprofessional not knowing the exact number, but I mean, great class. Starting off with the quarterback, Ty Thompson. Love their offensive line class, which I've been saying. We've been talking about this for 2 years now, John. If you want to, really be a dominant team, especially out west, you got to be strong up front. There's not a lot of elite offensive linemen or D tackles out west right now, so you got to get the best ones you can, and Oregon's been able to really do that. So I like the DB class. I like their wide receiver class. Keith Brown got that guy in the middle. So I mean, really, you don't see a weakness in their class. It's balanced, meaning you don't see 18 wide receivers. You see balance. You see your quarterback, your running back, getting Byron Caldwell. For me, this is a top 100 player, the best running back out west, and Oregon just kind of threw their hat in the ring, about a month and a half before signing day, and they were still able to go and get him. So that kind of shows you the power of an Oregon Duck offer right now, where they can go and beat out, both SC and UCLA were on him hard. Cal was all over him. He had schools like A&M and Florida State, even Auburn offered late. Oregon able to seal the deal. Seven McGee. I had to see him playing some club football out here. We do have club football right now, John. That's a whole other topic, probably. But he's a dynamic slot wide receiver, all-purpose back. So, I can go on and on and on. Really like their class top to bottom.
Sixth nationally, just outside the top five, according to 24/7 Sports. But, yeah, talk about club football. Help us understand what club football is. How is that different than high school football?
So, it's pretty radical, to be honest with you. It's, a couple different groups. Winner Circle Athletics started up Alona, and then another group called the Elite 10 started up a group in Arizona, right there, Bullhead City / Laughlin. And the Arizona one is all Southern California teams. Obviously, they're able to do some things in Arizona that we can't do out here. So it's real football. I've been to both, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised. I was thinking, it was going to be kind of like a crap show. But it was actually, it's four or five legit CIF sanctioned referees. It's, it's the one in Arizona had literally a jumbo screen, and you're able to actually, if you wanted to throw a flag and have a play reviewed, they would review it right there, kind of just to make it a little different. But
yeah,
football's good. The teams were good. Obviously, it's club, so you can't have your high school team. But For example, out here, Servite High School, they played under the guise of Juice County. That was their name. And you can't have the actual coaches, but, you know, you have friends of the program kind of coach up the players. And so I was able to see, you know, a few games, and that's kind of what they're doing right now. And they're kind of just waiting to see what's going to happen out here in March. And if once they actually say, okay, we're going to have a season, then I don't know if they'll still have a club season. But everyone's kind of banking on them canceling at some point the high school season. And if they do, you know, both these groups are saying we're going to have 40, 50, 60, you know, different high school teams kind of join our club under the different names and actually having a full-on spring season. So kind of waiting and seeing on that.
Greg Biggins, 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Analyst. I get a lot of parents who will say to me, Greg, like, hey, my kid's not getting their senior season. You're talking about the club season. What about the kids who aren't going to be able to play? How challenging is that for the late blooming kid that, you know, typically had a great senior season and maybe came out of left field, nobody saw him coming, or developed in a way and suddenly had new offers? Are those kids going to be able to find places in, you know, in the Pac-12?
So, funny, that's super topical. I went to a camp in San Diego last weekend, a group called National Prep put on a really good camp, and I saw some legit dudes, 2021s, and these kids, I've always said, I think the biggest year for development for high school kids is between your junior and senior year, and it's kind of rough because recruiting-wise, most of these colleges have kind of already made up their mind and offered who they want before a senior year even played out, but this year, I mean, I saw a couple of kids who literally put on 40, 50 pounds. They're bigger, stronger, faster, and they were really good watching them run around and do this camp, and your heart just kind of hurts for them because you talk to them and you're going, hey, like, I don't remember you last year. And the guy's like, yeah, I was 6'3", 220, and now I'm 6'5", 250. And if we had a fall season out here, these would be legitimate Pac-12 Mountain West guys, but their junior film was just okay, right? They had that huge off-season development and no season for them to be seen. So, you know, that's what your heart breaks for. You know, I think right now there's so many guys that just didn't have that opportunity. And so I've been making calls on my own, just trying to let people know, hey, there's this kid, you know, and you're not going to really watch the junior tape and love him. But, like, just if you see this camp footage, this guy can play. And so, you know, at most, though, I think we've talked about this before. Right now, colleges, they don't want to offer high school kids that are kind of on that borderline. They want to save those last three or four rides for the transfer portal, right? That wave is going to just take over from here on out. I fully believe that, where in the past, you know, if you had four or five rides left, you would kind of use it on maybe a sleeper guy or high-end ceiling projection guy. Now, if you have a chance, you're going to save that ride for the portal because you have a guy who's played college ball for 2 years. He's already experienced. You know what he can do. You've seen it with your eyes. And maybe he was just in a bad situation. Maybe he's homesick. Maybe he got buried on a depth chart, but you know he can play. If you're a college, you're going to go on that guy now, especially with the new rule that's going to get passed where you can have immediate eligibility for that transfer portal kid. You know, if it's between that guy and some, you know, borderline high school kid, you're going to go portal every time.
Greg Biggins, National Recruiting Analyst, 24/7 Sports. It's interesting you mentioned the portal. I think Oregon State tries to do a good job in the portal. Utah does as well. But how does that affect the recruiting ranking for Oregon State? Because I hear a lot of people say, look, you can't really compare the teams that live in the portal to the teams that are recruiting high school kids. What do they mean by that?
So, again, kind of funny that you're bringing that up. We actually have been having meetings in our little recruiting talks, and we do think there's got to be a way to incorporate the transfer portal rankings with the high school rankings. And for the simple reason of what I just said, schools are maybe not the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the Ohio States, but literally program number like 8 through 100, those schools, good schools, even, you know, schools that are, you know, playoff teams, they're going to stop giving out 25 rides to high school kids. They're going to say the last four or five and use it for portal. And because of that fact, I think we do need to find a way to start incorporating portal rankings. Now, right now we're talking about maybe having a separate high school and then a separate portal ranking. It's really hard if you kind of combine those two. If you have a kid who maybe, you know, like just said this morning, Jeremiah Martin, A&M guy, portal, he's committed to Washington. Where do you rank him, right? You can't rank him based on where he was at a high school because he's not the same guy he was in high school. He was an All-American, offered by every kid, had 25 sacks as a senior, and I think he's had 11 tackles in 3 years at A&M. So you can't give him the same kind of ranking. But you've got to still try to find a way to reward those schools for bringing in a guy who can come in and play for you and immediately help you, right? So, again, trying to find that balance, trying to figure out what the best way to do it. But a school like Oregon State, who is going to rely on the portal to kind of balance out their class, I do feel like they should be rewarded in some way. That's, like I said, that's what we're trying to figure out right now.
Jonathan Smith, I thought they took a step forward on the field. They went out and signed 11 players. Their class was not high in the Pac-12, but you look at sort of the trend with the transfer portal, and you got to feel pretty good about it. What do you see Jonathan Smith doing at Oregon State?
So if I'm Jonathan Smith, I would really use that portal. And honestly, it's always going to be hard for, I would say, in the Pac-12, probably Oregon State and maybe like Washington State. Those are probably the two programs that are always going to struggle to recruit against the other schools. Not because they're bad schools or because they don't have coaches that recruit hard. It's just there's not a lot of in-state talent in that Pullman area or in that Corvallis area. And even those guys that are super elite, they're going to probably traditionally go national. So if you're, Oregon State, you got to really, really do a great job of evaluating and almost out-evaluating other guys, and then hope that the guys that you like don't get seen by other schools. Again, I don't feel like I'm insulting, Oregon State, because I do like Jonathan a lot. But, it's hard for Oregon State to recruit against an SC, a UCLA, an Oregon, a Washington, a Stanford, a Cal, right? It's going to be hard. So if it's me, I definitely use that portal, and I hold out maybe 5, even 8 or 9 spots, because what you're seeing with these portal kids is they don't care about height. They don't care about, how hard you're recruiting them. They don't care about bells and whistles and how nice the weight room is, and they want to play. And so when you recruit a kid in the portal, you don't really have to line them and dine them and show them a bunch of glitz that you have to do with a lot of these high school kids. He's a more serious athlete. He's a guy who just doesn't care about that. He wants to come in and find a way that, hey, where can I come in and play right now? Are these coaches good enough to develop me and hopefully get me to the NFL? And that's what their main focus is. And even like a school like UCLA, like we talk about UCLA a lot because Chip Kelly, right, he has those great Oregon ties, but UCLA just doesn't recruit those elite kids in Southern California. But they've actually had good success in the portal because UCLA is a school that has a lot to sell. But UCLA's not going to ever out-recruit anybody. That's just not how they're wired. They're not going to go and love a kid up and have a kid go, oh, my gosh, they're showing me so much attention. That's not UCLA or Chip Kelly style. But you can go get a kid in the portal who sees UCLA for what it is. Maybe he'll go see Oregon State for what it is, a program that's on the rise that has good coaches that will develop you. You can come into play right now. And so I would save, if I'm Oregon State, at least 7, 8, maybe even more. Now, you don't want to build your whole class around portal kids because these guys only have 1 or 2 years of eligibility, but I definitely think you can bring in 7, 8 guys to kind of offset your high school kids, and I think you can build a class that way.
It's interesting to kind of look at the philosophy of it, and you talked about UCLA. Like, why Chip Kelly never did that at Oregon either. He recruited sort of athletes. They go to the national championship game. He doesn't have a player drafted in the first round the next year. Like, I look at Oregon and Chip Kelly, and then I look at UCLA and Chip Kelly, and I go, gosh, he's not doing maybe what he could do in recruiting. Like, when you look at that, Greg, you're the analyst. Like, what do you see UCLA not doing? What could they be doing better?
Yeah, and they're not one of those schools that just wants to have a player go there because they just showed them so much, so much attention, so much love. They're not going to be... You talk to a kid and you hear the name Dante Williams. And you say, hey, why do you like Dante? Well, he calls me every day. We really connect well. Why do you like Oregon? Because I have 18 coaches over there that literally hit me up every single day. That's never going to be UCLA under Chip. For whatever reason, that's just not what he wants to do to get a kid. He wants you to choose UCLA because it's UCLA and because of the location and because academically they got a great reputation and because – hey, we can come and develop you. We're going to out-scheme schools and look at what I've done here. That's their philosophy. And so they're always going to be kind of, the 8th or 9th school to offer a kid. They're not going to ever be first because they really want to take their time, make sure he's the right guy and the right fit. So they're always going to be a little bit later on that. And once they do offer a kid, they're not ever going to be that school that's just going to, overwhelm the kid. And I don't think they do a great job of getting kids on campus. Even Southern California kids. There was a couple years ago where kids were getting to Oregon more than they were getting to UCLA. And obviously UCLA is down the street. So it just, they don't put a lot of effort into it. And that's not to say they're lazy. It's just a different philosophy. You know, again, they want to do a little more of a longer evaluation. And they believe that, okay, that high-end five-star kid, that's just going to take too much time. Corey Foreman. Yeah, we'll offer Corey, but, you know, when it comes down to it, like, we don't want to put in, you know, all the effort and do all the other things you need to do to get a Corey Foreman or to get the next guy. But we can go after maybe that high-end, mid-level, high-end three-star who we think is almost as good, who we can develop. Maybe he's got that length. Maybe he's more raw, but he's got some long-term projections. He's got some physical attributes we like. Again, every college coach you talk to now is length. We want length, guys who can run, guys who we can develop. And so they're not going to go after the guy. Again, I don't want to call it low-hanging fruit. That sounds insulting, but they just seem to want to go after that next guy, not put in as much work, because that prima donna five-star sometimes can be a lot of work. Go after the next guy, and then, again, the hope is we can out-evaluate, develop this kid, and we can build a winning program. So we'll see. I mean, this is their first year this year. When I say this year, I mean this coming Pac-12 season where, you know, UCLA actually has a lot of guys back, a lot of returning players, not the youngest team anymore. They got an experienced quarterback. It's his system on both sides of the ball now. And you saw some strides last year, you know, some close losses to Oregon, USC, Stanford. So I think this is a make-or-break year for him, I really do. If they don't win 8, 9, 10 games, they got a new AD now who seems like he's pretty fired up. You know, if they don't win 8, 9 games, it might be tough for him to come back for the year following this upcoming one.
Greg Biggins is with us, national recruiting analyst, 24/7 Sports. I'm curious about Jimmy Lake in Washington, and we got a lot of Washington fans who listen to the show. What do you see in Washington's class and in their trajectory?
So, you know, I'm fascinated. They're always going to recruit defensive kids really well because Jimmy has shown that they can do as good, if not the best job in the Pac-12 at developing guys, especially in that secondary. I mean, they're going to probably get two more guys drafted highly in that secondary. Jimmy's a guy. The thing that that you hear kind of some murmurings about from some kids is just offensively, you know, you got to show me a little bit more. Obviously, you have Sam Heward coming in, who, even though they have a returning quarterback in Dylan Morris, who I liked in high school, but I think Sam has a chance to be special. They've recruited the wide receiver position pretty well over the last couple of years. So there's talent at the wide receiver position. There's always talent at Washington. So just from a recruiting standpoint, I've noticed Jimmy, he's not necessarily, again, I'm not saying he's going Chip Kelly, but they seem to kind of be going after guys that aren't maybe the highest rated guy, but guys that bring some toughness, maybe a little more grit. And the hope is they'll come in hungry and they can kind of develop and scheme and do all that. So defensively, I always like what they do. I thought they brought in, you know, some really solid players in 2021. So just offensively, you know, you got to see some improvement on the field. Scheme-wise, I think Sam will be good. If it's Sam, you know, great. And then just in-state recruiting, right? The 21 class is one of the best that Washington's ever had. You know, JT Tuimoloau, Emeka Egbuka. I already mentioned Sam, a few other guys. They got Sam. They lost Emeka. I think JT is probably leaning to Bama or Ohio State. So if you really want to build, you know, you got to keep those in-state guys home if you can. I know it's tough, but I think that's something you got to do if you're Washington and then just try to continue to recruit really well in Southern California, which, you know, you always do. So we'll see. My eyes are wide open. I like Jimmy, great defensive coach. I'm curious, again, just want to see some improvement offensively.
All right, so, you know, you live in that recruiting ranking world. You get to see the national picture. For the Pac-12 conference, is the trend, Oregon or bust, or are there some other promising developments within the conference, or are they losing ground on the rest of the country, Greg?
No, I think USC did a great job, right? I mean, it's hard for me to even verbalize this, but they finished 10th in the Pac-12 last year. You know, I think we talked about that, and this is a school, USC, who had never finished outside of the top four since I've been doing this, and that was 2 years that they finished, like, fourth, and in those 2 years, they were still in the top 25 nationally, so, like, way too much math I just threw out there, but long story short, this year, going from 10th in the Pac-12, and I think in the 60 to 70 range, this year they finished number two and in the top 10. So you love to see it. I feel like the Pac-12, I thought college football is better when USC's good. I like college football when Notre Dame is good and when Miami, the Hurricanes are good. So I think for USC, when USC is good, it kind of just brings more attention to the rest of the Pac-12. It can't just be Oregon. It can't just be, it's got to be four or five schools. You know, we had a time when Stanford was nationally relevant and Oregon was nationally relevant. And, you had USC was nationally relevant. Washington made a playoff. It'd be nice to see UCLA kind of rebound. It'd be nice to see Cal kind of rebound. Arizona State, I think, is making strides. I think the common denominator with Arizona State and USC is they both put such an emphasis on recruiting right now. I mean, they are extremely passionate. They're trying to follow, not trying to follow, but, they're seeing what Oregon's doing, and they're being extremely active on social media, and they're hiring hungry young coaches. ASU has a young staff. I mean, like Chris Hawkins, who I covered as a high school player, is their DB coach. Chris Claiborne, who's a longtime friend, is their new linebacker coach. Adam Bredeman's the new tight end coach. I covered him just a few years ago. And you have, Antonio Pierce, who is the recruiting coordinator, not the youngest guy. He's still young, but, I mean, he's extremely aggressive. And USC, I thought, and I said this on National Signing Day, I hope it didn't sound corny, but for me, I think when they brought Dante Williams, referring to USC, when they brought Dante, and Oregon fans know how good he is, he's as good as there is, I felt like his energy and the way he recruited with so much kind of like just so much passion, it elevated the rest of the staff. I think at USC, it's really easy to kind of be able to just use our name, USC, throw our name out there and hope and assume kids are going to come. Because for years and years and years, USC was able to recruit by its name itself. Kids in Southern California want to go to USC. It's almost like you just have to give a reason not to go there, right? It's like starting off in your school with an A. You already lead for the kid as a sophomore. Now just find a way to not lose the kid. And I think USC kind of got lazy. So when they brought in Dante Williams, I think the rest of the staff kind of picked it up. Their other two new assistants on the defensive side of the ball, Craig Navar did a great job. Vic Soto did a phenomenal job on the D-line. Yep. I think they just really became a passionate staff. USC, top 10, Corey Foreman recently flipped. Rajon Davis as well, early LSU commit. Got the two quarterbacks. They really finished off with on a high note, and I think they're doing really well in 2022 as well.
All right, Biggins, I got to run. You're terrific. You stay safe out there. Keep doing what you do.
You too. Thanks, John. Always good talking to you.
Greg Biggins, he's the best nationally on recruiting. Leave it here. Our big splash has an NFL feel to it.
The one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be.
The Big Splash! Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Big Splash today, Marty Schottenheimer, who won 200 regular season games with four NFL teams, died today. He was 77. He was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease about 7 years ago. He went into hospice in late January. Eighth winningest coach in NFL history. Marty Schottenheimer, who, you know what, won a lot in the regular season, right? He won 10 or more games 11 times, including going 14-2 with the Chargers in 2006. But in the playoffs, Marty Schottenheimer was 5-13 in the postseason and got a reputation as a...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald...
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but... If you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.